Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Friday edition of the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. And it's getting better all the time. Want to thank our most recent guest, Bill Press, podcaster, pundit, friend of ours. And we welcome a newfound guest live via Zoom. He is former U.S. Attorney James Santel, friend of ours. Jim, always a pleasure to have you join me on a Friday.
It is always good to be with you, Mike, especially in a time when this afternoon we can have genuine legitimate political discourse and not some other fraudulent version of that.
Well, you know, that's to be seen. But let's start by talking about the vice president. The vice president gave a speech today, and it's never going to be strong enough for my taste. It's sort of thin gruel, but he did say specifically that Donald Trump is wrong. Effectively telling the big lie is wrong. It didn't happen. I know that, you know, we've tried to hold Pence up as some sort of backstop. You know, perhaps he helped save democracy, but, you know, it's still thin gruel, Jim.
Absolutely. And so this comes as the vice president is speaking in front of the Federalist Society. One member of the Supreme Court is also speaking. A fellow named Neil Gorsuch is talking with them this afternoon or today. And of course, all this comes in the wake of the president's rally, and I think it's Conroe, Texas, in which he said that Mike Pence personally could have overturned the election by refusing to count the delegates, the Electoral College, and therefore not giving Joe Biden the presidency. We know that's wrong as a procedural matter. We know that's wrong as a constitutional matter. And today it is significant, perhaps not the most significant thing that has ever happened in American history, but the vice president plainly is courting now another part of the party and saying in unequivocal terms that the former president is wrong about that, that he did not have the authority. The Constitution did, in fact, require him to do what he did do. And I think it's significant because it does indicate a break, which, again, I think Mike Pence, at least up to now, has been somewhat reluctant to do. At least he has tried to engage in a bit of a dance when it comes to still engaging in that side of the political party. Today, moving further across the dance floor, if you will, to continue the metaphor, away from the former president, most appropriately. I agree with you. The language could be even stronger. All of this advocacy by the former president and the other people who continue to surround him in his sphere, wildly, factually inappropriate, unsupported, and destructive to our democracy.
Jim, I thought it was a big week, at least revelations that have become public this week. A lot of reporting from the New York Times and the Washington Post. We learned this week that what? Trump asked Attorney General Bill Barr to seize voting machines. Then he turned to what? Retired General Michael Flynn and tried to have him do it and perhaps brought Sidney Powell along. And then finally, when apparently the Department of Defense didn't seem like a viable avenue, then he had Rudy or encouraged Rudy to go tell Homeland Security to do it. So they wanted to, what, use raw data from the NSA without warrants to justify seizing voting machines. Jim, something here smells a little fishy to me.
It is more than a little fishy. And about 17 things wrong with not your account of it, but the story about what happened here. And again, you've got it just right. It plainly gives us more sense of the various levels of this attempt, not only to overthrow the government, if you will, but assume the election that had just happened. And so this is another layer of that, as you just indicated, plainly premised upon some very bad legal advice that the former president was getting. premised upon, again, this notion with NSA information about some foreign intervention. Let's go to different agencies in the federal government to try to get them, see if they've got the authority to seize these election boxes, these voting machines in the states. And you're absolutely right. He goes to the Department of Homeland Security, gets shut down there, goes to the Pentagon, gets shut down there. Bill Barr, Justice Department, likewise. He's looking all around to try to find someone in one of these agencies that will say to him, contrary to what is, contrary to what their authority is, yes, Mr. President, we can do this for you. We can go out and we can seize voting machines in the states and therefore bring all this craziness to an end, that the notion that Joe Biden has been properly elected. It is, again, I look for new adjectives. It is outrageous. It is unfounded. And again, it gives you some sense of the extent to which this very purposeful attempt to frankly undermine our government at the state level, at the federal level, and then also on January 6th, which as we now look back in it, was as horrific as that was just a part of the attempt to overthrow our government.
James Intel, as a former state Department of Justice employee, I would wonder, would you ever have guessed in a million years that recent Masked Singer contestant Rudy Giuliani would have been the guardrail that stopped Trump from utilizing Homeland Security to seize voting machines through marshals of some sort?
We consistently look to Rudy and we think, gosh, what outrageous thing will you do? What thing will you say? Plainly, he was with Sidney Powell and others advocating post-election, even pre-election, that the election was going to be and was in fact stolen. And so we got an awful lot from Rudy Giuliani indicating that he is not a friend of the facts and not a friend of the truth. Here, once again, as you indicate, plainly in these meetings in the Oval Office, in the White House, we're finding out now more about meetings at the Trump Hotel a few blocks away from the White House. We find out that...
Linger there for just a minute, Jim. The Trump Hotel meeting, January 4th, apparently the date, attended in person by two Republican U.S. senators, attended virtually by U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, and that was the meeting where they laid out the scheme to utilize NSA raw data. Now, Jim, in and of itself, simply attending a meeting of that sort and then watching a plan of this sort come to fruition, even if it failed, clearly they carried forward on the plan. Does that suggest some criminality amongst the attendees, in your opinion, Counselor?
Yeah, this is the reason why it'd be very important when you focus on an event like January 4th, again, at the Trump Hotel. You have to really almost get witnesses there. You're not going to get a transcript of it necessarily, but we know, for example, the pillow guy, Mike Lindell, brought this together. And you need to establish that the people that you invited there have, again, agreed to do something. Have you conspired in some way? Is there some agreement to accomplish an illegal end? And have you done some overt act? Have you done something in furtherance of it? I would offer to you, Mike, that simply attending, listening to something does not bring with it criminal culpability, criminal liability. But if, in fact, you do other things, and you exhibit an agreement that comes from that meeting, that there is an understanding about what you're going to do next, and your purpose with others is to conspire with them to do these things, like use this NSA information to try to get agencies of the federal government to seize the voting equipment, that sort of thing, then you have moved into an area of criminal exposure. The question is, what exactly was said? Simply listening isn't enough. But again, as all these things happen, we find out more and more as the reporting becomes more and more clear. And people, including perhaps some 425 people who have testified before the House Select Committee, tell us what's happening in these conversations.
Jim, let's turn to the false electors for a minute. We find out that an attorney, Cheeseboro, apparently was writing correspondence to Jim Troupas, who's a former Scott Walker, Republican governor of the state of Wisconsin, buddy. And Troupas went on to a district court appointment and eventually looked like he wasn't going to get to the Supreme Court, so he's moved on to represent the Trump lawsuits and trying to win back some shred of overturning the electoral results in Wisconsin. And he wasn't succeeding. But he got this correspondence suggesting this scheme of bringing false electors And it seemed like because of Wisconsin's low threshold, effectively all you had to do legally was be in the state capitol building, they thought it was quite unproblematic to put forth these fraudulent electors in the state of Wisconsin. Well, Jim, we know they were Wisconsin Elections Commissioner Bob Spindell, chairman of the Republican Party Andrew Hitt, who is a lawyer by trade. Jim, I don't care what sort of legal advice they were getting back in the state of Wisconsin, or even from a guy like Rudy, they had to sense that something here when they were certifying fraudulent information. If I did that on a loan application at the bank, they'd haul my ass to jail, Jim.
Absolutely. And, you know, the defense, which we're hearing somewhat of, gosh, my lawyer told me this, or I got a legal memorandum, that only goes so far. Those are things like, what is the nature and extent, for example, of a privilege? We know what kinds of things can we talk about when it comes to elements of proof in a claim? And to your point, if a lawyer tells you that, well, I think it's okay, Mike, for me to operate a meth lab in my basement or to rob a bank, that sort of thing. Common sense, you don't have to be a lawyer, you don't have to be a member of the federal government, an employee in some way, to know that no, that kind of legal advice has got to be wrong. And to get to your point, in that moment, when those false electors were meeting in the state capitol, again, they understood a lot of the technical process, they had to be aware of the fact that right down the hallway, the legitimate electors were meeting, and those tapes we've seen, those video we've seen, properly casting those votes in Wisconsin, that was going on, and they had to know. They had to know, and they did, in fact, know. The documents that they were signing, things they were putting together and sending off, not just playing games here in Madison for the purpose of having fun, sending them off legitimately to Washington, D.C., the archivist, and others plainly in Washington, D.C., at Capitol Hill. They had to know that their purpose was to defraud. And again, I look at that very compellingly and see the strong possibility of a federal criminal prosecution. We can cite, once again, a number of different federal statutes in the criminal code. We know that Lisa Monaco, the deputy attorney general, has said, yes, we've gotten this. We are looking at this. We have received this information. There is an open file. There are open files as to at least the number of electors in Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Mexico, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, all of those. They're sitting in main justice right now, and people are looking at this to determine whether or not there should be charges here. This is a very, very serious matter.
Jim, I think we're short on time. We'll come right back. More Devil's Advocates.